There are many ways that you can approach the question of origins. Some scholars have written about the very long-term origins. One can see certain strands amongst the Greeks and the Romans many, many hundreds of years ago. Other people see strands coming into human rights from writings during the Middle Ages about law and natural right, which was already a concept. I myself have emphasized the 18th century as a time when the political revolutions got people to thinking about the foundations of government, and so they tied the notion of rights to the legitimacy of government, which I take to be a new move when it's attached to a real idea of human rights, that is, universal rights.
Which understanding is most useful for us today in early 21st century America? The idea of human rights coming from Greek and Roman roots of personhood, or the cessation of torture, or the end of slavery, or the Enlightenment version of government legitimacy coming from individual rights?
Different people have different ideas about what means the most to them. But for me, what was really interesting about the 18th century was, in fact, the coming together, for example, of the campaign against judicial torture and cruel punishments, and the campaign for the abolition of slavery, which only starts at the end of the 18th century, and the notion of natural rights or human rights as related to government. So that's the fact that they all kind of come together and are seen as related to each other is what I think is really interesting about the 18th century.
What makes that so important, that coming together that you just said?
What's interesting about this 18th century coalescence of these different campaigns is I think that really helps shape a universal notion of human rights that can be used by people no matter what their country now, no matter what their religious tradition now, no matter what their legal tradition now. It's a way of saying all these things are related to each other because they have to do with the dignity, value, and rights of the individual person, and that applies to everybody. And that, so the coming together of the campaigns in the 18th century, I think, is very important to making rights available to everyone. It's not just the rights of American citizens, or the rights of British citizens, which had been articulated already in the 17th and 18th century, but the rights of everyone, everywhere.
Well, they're still not universally accepted, are they?
It depends on how you describe them. What is interesting, actually, in the 20th century is that increasingly, especially once you get the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, governments, even those that are actually trampling all over human rights, in our opinion, feel that they must make some kind of gesture toward the notion of rights because everyone's beginning to hear about them, and it provides a platform for agitation. So governments feel that they either have to explain why they don't appeal in their culture, or they have to explain how, well, yes, they really do believe in them, but they happen to have to put them aside for now because of national security, because they need to develop the economy, whatever the rationale.
Why is this an important time for us to pay attention to the origins?
I think one of the reasons that people became interested in the historical origins was because the movement in the present also began to coalesce. Let's say, after the Universal Declaration in 1948, especially in the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, there was much more concern for thinking about the rights of people in other parts of the world, and also, of course, great discussion, it hasn't been resolved, of whether there should be interventions to save people from the destruction of their rights or even their ability to exist as a people. So our current arguments are very much, it seems to me, premised on worries about this question. There's no obvious answer. But for example, most recently there were missile strikes against the Syrian government because they had used chemical weapons. Now they had been successfully killing hundreds of thousands of their own citizens already, but clearly the US and Britain and France felt that using chemical weapons, which are supposed to be outlawed everywhere, was going too far in the suppression of your own people. And so we're very much involved in these discussions about what are the rights that people have and who should protect them.
In that instance, and in many others that could be cited, though, what's driving it? Is it a political consideration, or is it true concern about human rights? There are lots of human rights issues that get very little attention and action at all that could be framed in about the same way as the use of chemical weapons.
Right. But I think what has happened is that because there's so much more international discussion of human rights, it's given people in many societies a kind of lever against their own government to not necessarily to overthrow their government, to pressure their government on what they should be allowing them. So it's a complicated interaction. It's not just what goes on in a country. Take, for example, Saudi Arabia and women, whether they have the right to drive. Well, part of the pressure there on Saudi Arabia that has led them to change their laws about women driving is that internationally there was a lot of discussion. There would be conferences about women's rights, let's say, or human rights more generally, and there would be a lot of talk about how this was really not acceptable by international norms. So, yes, it involves political considerations, absolutely, and this is a big issue, whether human rights even work at all unless it satisfies certain political issues. But it also, it seems to me clear that it has a kind of independent status, leaving aside great power politics, that allows people to exert pressure in a new way that they wouldn't have been able to exert before.
You're describing an arc of history that bends toward justice, but is it an arc or is it a pendulum? And is the consideration of human rights as this concept something that can go away once again in culture if the institutions that protect any given government or national system fray?
There's no question that there's not like just a straight arrow upward of ever more rights. I do think there's a kind of logic of rights that means that once you grant something, it's hard to resist other demands that are going to be made along the same lines. So I think there is a movement in a certain direction, but I think there are backlashes in each individual culture. And I wouldn't call it, though, a pendulum, because it's a pendulum, I think, over the long run in which you don't just return to zero, but you press for rights, some are granted, there's a backlash. But the backlash never takes you all the way back to zero. It's always a kind of back and forth. And I do think the long-term movement has been towards greater recognition of rights all over the world. Do I think that's a complete process? No. Do I think it's an inevitable process? No. But I think rights have a kind of deep appeal to people that have made them a very effective tool for people who don't have political standing to make their demands known.
With each evolution of philosophy, something else is gained, something else is considered. What do you think is the next iteration?
Well, one of the interesting things about the what I've been calling the logic of rights or the dynamic of rights is that actually you can't predict what is going to be the next demand until you have a kind of articulation of where you are now. This is why I'm so interested in the dynamic of the French Revolution, because they declare rights in this very universalistic language. And the first thing that happens is they have to decide on who gets the right to vote. And all of a sudden they realize, oh, we didn't really intend for everyone to have the right to vote. We wanted property holders to have the right to vote. We wanted adults to have the right to vote. We wanted men to have the right to vote. But what about, we said there's religious freedom. So Does that mean Protestants have the right to vote? Well, yes, it does mean that. Does that mean Jews have the right to vote? Huge discussion. Does it mean women should get the right to vote? Huge discussion. Does it mean that slavery is unacceptable? Another huge discussion. So I was really fascinated by the way that the minute you articulated the notion of rights, all these groups stepped forward and said, well, that must mean us, because you said all men. You didn't say some men. You didn't say white men. You didn't say Catholic men. You didn't even say French men. So you can't predict what's going to happen. The people who did the Declaration in France in August 1789 had no interest in abolishing slavery. And yet they found themselves abolishing slavery 5 years later. So people understood that there was a kind of dynamic, but they had no idea where it was going to lead. So now, for example, the achievement of rights for homosexuals came as a huge surprise to probably everyone. The minute that was articulated, the issue of transgender people came up in a way that had never come up before. So it's very hard to say what the next frontier is going to be. I myself think it's going to be animals. The whole question of how animals should be treated and whether they have rights or not, whether rights are only for humans. One could even argue there are going to be discussions about the globe that we inhabit, the earth, the environment, and possibly even plants, which are being discussed in ways that I never thought plants would be discussed before. So who knows what will actually come up as a demand. Certainly animal rights is already on the agenda for some people. I don't think it's very widespread yet. But that's what I mean about the unpredictability. Who knows what is going to come up?
Well, here's an extrapolating to infinity kind of question. If each development creates a new area, a category of people or even animals covered by this, is this by extension antithetical to central authority? Are we setting up a progression that will eventually be hostile to governments?
I don't think so. At least, I certainly don't think so yet. First of all, political rights, for example, which were the first that were really agitated about in the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, and much of the 20th century, for that matter, political rights can only be exercised within some kind of state organization, no matter how small or how big. So there's been a very deep connection between political authority and rights. Perhaps in the future that will be less true, but I don't see it now. It is certainly not less true now.
What are the things that people are arguing about or debating about right now in human rights?
I think two main questions. Is the struggle over rights now, that is since the 1970s, fundamentally different from preceding ones because it involves the possibility of intervening in the affairs of sovereign states? In other words, if the UN is going to intervene to protect rights, if the United States, France, and Britain are going to bomb Syria on the grounds that they have to protect people against the government, this is intervention in another state. That is a new kind of issue. So there's an interesting question about whether things are different now. Sorry about my doorbell ringing in the background. It's the mailman saying that the mail is here. And the other issue is, why do people come to believe in rights when they didn't believe in them previously? So in my case, the French, I was interested in, why are they having a Declaration of the Rights of Man and Citizen? Is it because of the influence of the American Revolution? Is it because of internal French things? What's the best way to explain this? And there's a lot of debate about the best way to explain it. And a lot of the debate centers around something I talked about in my book and other people have also talked about, and that's the question of empathy. Is empathy the reason that people believe in rights because they can empathize with people who are different from themselves? Or is empathy a really weak reed on which to rest human rights? and it's better to stick with legal thinking about rights and staying away from the idea that that arousing empathy is the key to rights. So there's a lot of debate about empathy and a lot of debate about whether the current issues are fundamentally different from issues in the past.
Well, what do you think about empathy as the root of it? I mean, empathy, in some sense, is partly controlled by a sufficiency of resources. It tends to diminish if you're really desperate.
That is certainly true. Yeah, but I became interested in this because my feeling about the 18th century was that the thing you really had to explain was not the idea that there were such things as rights. There's always been rights. As long as there's been private property, there's been the idea of rights. The difference is the idea that rights are equal and universal. That's the big breakthrough. In other words, your rights don't depend on your social standing. Aristocrats have more rights than commoners have, that birth somehow defines the kind of rights you have. The idea that everyone has them because they're humans is a really radical idea, and what it's attached to is the idea of equality, that everyone is equal. And my view was, and I still hold it, it's very hard to explain how this idea of equality comes about when no one believes in equality much before the 18th century. There are little hints of it here and there before. We take the idea that, you know, one person, one vote to us seems obvious. It wasn't obvious to people in the past. It wasn't even obvious in the United States until actually relatively recently. So I was interested in what makes equality possible. And to me, equality, which is of course yet to be achieved and is perhaps unachievable in some pure sense, equality depends on feeling that other people are like you. So empathy to me is crucial to explaining that people could actually believe that other people are equal to them when it's so contrary to the way most of the world has been organized. And it's even, we can argue, still challenging for us to think in those terms today. We tend to think more in terms of, well, if you make a lot of money, you're a better person, you're smarter, you're better at things than people who don't make as much money. So the idea that everyone is absolutely equal before the law and has the same rights, very difficult to explain how you can come to that idea unless you can explain this kind of, what I see as a kind of psychological change of being able to imagine that other people are like you.